I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Little Atoms, a radio show about ideas and culture, with me, Neil Denny. On today's show, Helen Oyemi on her new novel, Parasol Against the Axe. Helen Oyemi is the author of The Icarus Girl, The Opposite House, White is for Witching, which won a Somerset Maugham Award, Mr. Fox, Boy Snowbird, Gingerbread, What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours, and Pieces, which was shortlisted for the Goldsmiths Prize and which we spoke about on Little Atoms a couple of years ago. In 2013, Helen was included in Granta's Best of Young British Novelists. And today we're going to talk about Helen's latest novel, which is Parasol Against the Axe. Helen, welcome back to Little Atoms.
Hi, Neil. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
First of all, then, tell us how you would describe this novel.
It's a heartfelt love letter to Prague that might seem kind of sarcastic or cold, but but is actually genuinely full of love.
So I wanted to ask, why Prague? Now, you live in Prague and you've lived in Prague for a number of years. So, like, tell us, I guess, let's widen that why Prague out then to both questions, why live there and why the book?
Oh, I have no idea why I live here. Like, I've started to, it was kind of good at first when I didn't speak that much Czech, because it meant that, like, nobody could ask me why I lived here. So I never had to say, I don't know. But the truth is, I don't know. It's just one of those things where you find the place and you didn't even know that it was the place of your dreams, but it turns out that it was, or it turns out that your dreams were stranger than you thought that they were, and everything just clicks. Like, I feel like before this, I've been living sort of experimentally. I had been living the life of a pre-Brexit European, feeling like I had all of these different countries that I could live in. So I tried a while in Budapest, Paris, and in Berlin and so on. And then Prague was just the one. So here I am. It's my favorite city. And it's very difficult to describe and very difficult to talk about. And the more that I read, so there's a body of work that's known as Pragensia, which is basically other writers through the centuries, not just writers, but just people who've been to Prague, who've just kind of been like, what is this place? And so I feel like I'm adding to this body of work that's just marveling at Prague and wondering what Prague even is.
Yeah, so this is a book, it's about Prague, more so than that, we'll get to in a minute. But also it has stories within it that are about Prague. And as you've just mentioned, there are lots of, you know, every student's ever been to Prague had a copy of the book Magic Prague with them when they were going there. Tell us about some of the other books about Prague that probably influenced this novel.
There's Prague, I See a City by Daniela Hodrava, which is very slim but very evocative, almost like wisps of smoke, and like through them you can see like the silhouettes of Prague architecture and important events that have happened here, but also just kind of suggestions of events that may or may not happen. There's Neruda's, I'm trying to think of the title, either Old Town Tales or Prague Tales. Like, I think it's translated variously, but the translation I have is called Old Town Tales, or is it Lesser Town Tales? Anyway, Neruda has a set of like just these fantastic, we might call them slice of life, but it's just what passes for normal in Prague tales. What else? I can't think of any of. Of course, there's The Golem by Gustav Meyrink, which is probably the first time that I encountered Prague in a book. but I didn't even understand. I think I was reading it incredulously and thinking, a place like this can't exist. And so it was always exciting and bizarre to sort of wander around like the streets that are named in the Golem and realize that he was actually talking about actual places that, yes, this place actually does exist.
Now, I can't count on one hand the number of times in an interview I've said to somebody that's written a book about a particular place, this so-and-so place feels like a character in the novel. And yet literally in this novel, Prague is the city itself is a narrator of the novel. So I want to talk about why you decided to do that and then how, I guess, what's the sort of the point of view of the city? How do you, you know, realistically make the city a believable narrator?
I think it was the only way that I could make this book work for me. Prague is so, part of the reason why it's so difficult to write about is because I think it's a city that doesn't really consent to be a subject. Like, it's always been, even in its own history, very active, and like the mystification of anyone who tries to take over Prague or define Prague. So like throughout the various sort of regimes that have tried to take control of the city, it's just always been, Prague has always just been too weird for them and ultimately has like slipped out of their grasp. So in order to kind of not fall prey to that trap, I had to just be like, okay, Prague, I recognize you as your own entity that has your own imagination. I'm thinking about the poet Apollinaire, who came to Prague in like the early 20th century, and he was walking around St. Vitus Cathedral and he saw a gargoyle that had his face. And he was like, what? And I think he went home very shaken and came back the next day and couldn't find it again. And things like this, I think there is a sense here always of the city imagining you who is passing through it, rather than you being able to transfer your imagination onto it. So I kind of was showing respect for that ability of Prague to kind of blend fiction and nonfiction by having it as a casual character.
Let's talk about some of the other characters then. So first of all, Hero, tell us who she is.
She's a journalist. You know, part of the fun of this book and really the center of it was having these two characters, and one comes to Prague and doesn't like it. And it's kind of like, when can I go home? But Prague, that's the one that Prague wants. And it's like, no, you have to stay. And so she comes and she's not allowed to leave, which sounds a lot more ominous than it plays out in the book, I hope. And then there's another character, Thea, who's like has the converse experience where she really wants to get under the skin of Prague and she's not allowed, like she's told that she can't stay. So with Hero, I think the main characteristic, and it's probably the same with relationships actually, is just that sense of like only really being wanted when you play hard to get. And the thing about Hero is that she actually is hard to get. She doesn't want to be there. And obviously she's the one that Prague is trying to seduce and cajole. She's a journalist. She's interested in facts and not so much in the razzle dazzle that Prague is trying to lure her with.
Tell us why she's there.
Oh, she has, she's trying to run away from a letter that she doesn't want to read. And at exactly the same time, she gets an invitation. She has a thing about not going to places unless she's invited. And so she gets this invitation to kind of ex-friend's hen party. And so she's like, why not? She goes.
So this is Sophie and Polly, their hen party. Tell us something about them. Because as you just mentioned, Sophie has a connection in the past to both Hero and Thea.
Yeah, they used to be part of a sort of triumvirate who were trying to change the world and realised that they couldn't, and that kind of fractured their relationship. So it's a kind of very complicated, like lots of feelings still left over, but with nowhere to go. And yeah, just a kind of complicated love, hate, and yet continually connected relationship that these three have. And Hero just kind of like goes along to the hen party, I guess, to see the friends who are replacing her in Sophie's life and just kind of see what this new life is that Sophie has abandoned their friendship for.
And so tell us a little bit more about Dorothea Gilmartin, Thea. Who is she?
I kind of like that the name Dorothea Gilmartin is sort of free-floating like entity within the book, where it's kind of like it's a name. Is actually Hero's pen name, and so she's kind of gobsmacked when she meets this character Thea, who has taken Thea has taken Hero's pen name, but it's because she doesn't like her own name, because her own name is very, her own name has become the character of a sort of communist propaganda for kids, like the main character of communist propaganda for kids. And it's very difficult for her to like move through the world under that name. So she pinches Hero's pen name and just kind of makes liberal use of it. And she's a very, everyone in the book is complicated and has like a sort of weird relationship with their past. Well, no, not weird. It's everyone in the book is determined not to be defined by what has happened to them and what has been transferred onto them. Maybe in a similar way to the way that Prague is, like it's impossible to sum Prague up based on the things that have happened here and the things that might happen here. It's Prague is always kind of like passing across some kind of threshold of possibility. And it's the same with Thea, where all of these things have happened to her in her life, like having had to leave Prague when she was very young with her father, and then coming back and trying to claim the city, but trying to claim it on her own terms as an adult without any kind of other associations.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Little Atoms. I'm Neil Denny. Today I'm talking to Helen Oyemi, and we're talking about her new novel, Parasol Against the Axe. And Helen, we've mentioned that the novel features other stories about Prague. These work as novels within a novel. So Hero has been given by her young son a book about Prague to take to Prague. A book called Paradoxical Undressing, which actually, it turns out, has multiple readings, or every time somebody reads it, or even every time Hero reads it, the story is different. Tell us something about this novel and why you've used it.
I'm not sure the why of it, but it just somehow made sense, especially to have, it's the first chapter that keeps on repeating, but kind of in different iterations. Like the first chapter is kind of saying, there's a phrase that the first chapter has in common, like most of the versions of the first chapter has in common, which is better than a poke in the eye. And it's kind of trying to, it's almost like like a portal into the pragmatism of Prague. And like, it's kind of like, okay, this is the situation. This is what's going on. Well, it's still better than a poke in the eye. And we get the chapters mostly from Hero and Thea's perspective, because every time they try and open the book, there's like this new first chapter and they can't find the old first chapter. But also every time they talk to somebody else who has read the book, they just hear this version of the book that is not, that they don't recognize at all. It's kind of, I guess, in a way, a comment on reading in general. And the way that sometimes when I talk to somebody else about a book that we've both read, it's as if we read completely different books. So something about reading being as individual as the reader.
Tell us something about the author of this novel, Merlin Mwenda, who also seems to sort of shift as the novel goes along.
Merlin Mwenda was fun and interesting to me because I have no idea how long he's been in Prague. Like, I tried to work out when he first got there and like what the, and this is kind of like, what we know that he was there in the 90s, or he claims to have been there in the 90s, when it was kind of like the wild west of capitalism, and that was how he lost his eye and so on. But he's just a very, I guess, almost as inscrutable as the narrator, as the Prague narrator is.
I wanted to talk about some of the stories within the book, Paradoxical Undressing. So the very first one, which is right towards the start of the book, is set in a Prague bookshop. Tell us something about this story.
I don't know. It just seems like a good place to begin. One of the first versions of Prague that I became really enamored with was the sort of Prague of the alchemists. And you can still go to castles like in the countryside and see where John Dee practiced his alchemy. And, you know, this the stomping grounds of Edward Kelly and like all of these people who came to Prague at King Rudolf's behest to try and solve the puzzle of immortality. And so that sense of Prague as a place where the philosopher's stone could be found is, I think, still very much in the atmosphere, along with like all of the other eras that Prague has been through. So it's just seemed like a good place to start.
And then there's one about 1950s communist Prague. Why that one?
Again, I felt like the most daunting thing about writing, well, this turns out to be my first Prague book, because now that I have Prague as a setting, I can write more like everyday Prague books. But there was something daunting about writing the first Prague work where it's kind of like, which Prague? Because there's Prague of the Alchemists, there's Prague under the Nazis, there's Prague under the Communists. There's all different kinds of Prague. There's contemporary Prague as well. And, you know, so all of the beginning chapters of Paradoxical Undressing that we see in the book are just kind of hints at all of the different Prague's that there are that coexist at the same time is kind of a oxymoron, but yeah.
And there's a version you just mentioned, which is the first one that Thea sees when she reads the book, which is about a Jewish dancer in 1940s Nazi occupied Prague. Tell us something about that story as well.
I was intrigued at the sort of hotels. There was a kind of hotel circuit here with like bugged rooms where like people could like spy on each other and listen in on conversations that were used throughout the eras. And so this kind of like sense of Prague as like a party city, but a dangerous party city. I wanted to touch on that as well. I feel like there were so many, I could have written like hundreds of different first chapters of Paradoxical Undressing.
And then just one more thing, and I'll get you to read a bit, if you would. Tell us something about the use of time in the novel, because time also seems, it's difficult to get a grasp on time in the novel because it sort of slips around.
Yeah, it's maybe one of my own observations about Prague in contrast to other places in Central Europe. Coming back, especially after a year in Budapest, which is like very, I feel as if Budapest very lovingly sort of clings to all of its trauma and all of its scars from the interwar period and the Second World War. And Prague is just not like that. It's almost as if, not that it didn't happen, but as if it's about to happen or on the brink of something, which kind of ties into the whole Prague as a threshold place. Like there's a very casual relationship with I guess having been the actual center of the theater of war. I live really close to to this church where actually a really tremendous thing happened, an operation Arthropoid with these parachutists who assassinated Heydrich. And it's kind of, for a long time, I didn't even know that that was what happened here. Like, it's just the church is just there. In other cities and in other countries, it would be like a huge, you know, huge memorial. And it is remembered here, but it's quietly remembered. Just things like that. Just Prague is a place where you can pass every day monuments to tremendous bravery and to tremendous like spirit. And it isn't ostentatious. And it's almost as if time has sort of sanded away the edges of that.
And so to finish it off, can I get you to read us a bit?
Yeah, I'll just read from the first few pages from chapter one. At some point, who knows how, I found myself a member of a WhatsApp group that seemed to have been set up as a safe space for sharing complaints about the capital city of Czechia. A couple of messages written by people who just wanted to say I had a nice time there were answered with polite but firm reminders that there was a different group for people who'd had a nice time in Prague, and that group should be sought out independently. Okay, then. I thought I'd take a quick look at the complaints. I expected 10 or 20 ill-founded grievances aired by the type of person who throws a tantrum when they come across locals who don't seem grateful that foreigners are taking an interest in their part of the world, more like poking their noses in. 10 or 20 stupid sob stories. But that wasn't what I found at all. Astonished, I scrolled for hours. So many harsh experiences, so much legitimate angst. Some of the incidents referred to had taken place many years ago. Apparently quite a few of them had happened to the narrator's grandparents. The messages written in Czech were the longest and pulsed with furious sarcasm. The messages written in Japanese were both the shortest and the most damning. The group members shared superficial information about themselves, nationality, ethnicity, age, height, in some instances weight and body measurements. It read as if they were victims trying to understand if their assailant had a type. They were wasting their time. There is no type. The city distributes its insults and outrages indiscriminately. Once I'd read enough, I wrote and sent a riposte that was almost immediately lost in the horde of far more compelling messages that appeared at the exact same instant. I wrote that I didn't remember any of these incidents, nor did I remember any of the people involved. Not if the characteristics they provided were supposed to serve as memory aids, anyway. I was sorry for what had happened to them. However, I was no more to blame than they were. I was sorry for every bad thing that happened, every scam and every diminishment of their self-respect. But what is it worth the sorrow of the onlooker? And that is what I was, the onlooker, not the cause. A little bit more than bystander, but still. What did all these people want? What had they really expected? Come on, kids, I wrote. Don't go to the city and then get all scandalized by city life. I'm not even one of the grand metropolises. If I was, I could have just eaten you and yours alive. I didn't, but no need to thank me. My self-esteem is in good health and doesn't require your gratitude. That was the gist of the message. I slightly regret having used so many exclamation marks. I wrote the same thing in Czech and in German. As far as I'm concerned, if you don't know both languages, then whatever it is you think you know about Prague is fundamentally compromised. Which only really matters, of course, if compromise or being compromised in this context really bothers you. A quick test. I didn't write that WhatsApp message of mine in English, so all that you received just now is a series of paraphrases. How does that sit with you? Feels yucky, does it? Then farewell. I gave that little message of mine 5 minutes to be seen by anybody who needed to see it. Then I deleted WhatsApp. Quite a procedure given that I don't really understand phones and wasn't too clear on how I downloaded the app and acquired a user account. My competence ebbs and flows. The truth is, I'm too, let's just say, old for telephones. I shouldn't use them. I should get a secretary. Hey, I'd like that, a secretary.
So I've been talking to Helen Ayemi. We've been talking about her new novel, Parasol Against the Axe, which is out now in the UK from Faber. Helen, thank you so much for taking the time to share it with me.
Thanks so much, Neil.
This episode of Little Atoms was produced, presented, and edited by me, Neil Denny. Little Atoms is hosted by Acast and published by 89UP. The show is broadcast on Mondays and Saturdays on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.